The WLEW, News and Public Affairs Department, now presents What Do You Think? Here's your host, Craig Routson, with today's topic.
Good morning. Our guest today in the studio on the program is Nathan from Farm Service Agency, Nathan Prill. He's the Executive Director, big title there. And we're going to be talking about the programs they're offering, things going on in the office, things you might need to know as the new year is starting off. Thanks for being with us.
Great to be here.
Okay. What's happening at the office right now? Is it kind of a quiet period, or does the government always find ways to keep you busy?
Well, what's happening is we've had a lot of staffing changes, so farmers may recognize a few new faces when they come into the office. But we're in the process of training new staff, hiring some new staff, and trying to get ready for 2017.
The most of the farmers find this year the time of year to be a little quiet, unless you're a dairy farmer, obviously, when you, right. They're still coming in wanting to be milked. But for the most part, this is kind of a planning era, and when people getting all their ducks in lines with seed and everything else they're going to do, they also have to get their ducks in line with you.
Right. So obviously this time of year we get a lot of tax questions from farmers that want to know exactly what payments were issued, what collections were required. And so we answer a lot of tax questions this time of year. And another thing that we work on is...
But you can only answer the questions as to how much the government says. You're not there to do their taxes.
No. Now, we're the side of the building that mostly does disbursements. We do a bit of loan activity as well. So that's where we get into some of that aspect of it. But yeah, this time of year, we're also working on updating our maps and trying to get records correct so that when farmers come in to report and participate in programs for 2017, we want to make sure that those records are correct so that we're not issuing payments improperly or that we're not collecting information that doesn't need to be collected.
And in my tenure here at the station, all these decades, they've gone from maps in a file to the computerized one. Is that making things easier for the office, or is there still just the same amount of work, just a different way of grabbing the information?
Well, what happens is every 2 or 3 years we get new imagery which goes underneath our GIS information. So we have our farm fields, we have our roads, we have everything, and then we think it's perfect.
and then someone goes out and makes more maps.
The airplanes fly, we get new imagery, and we find out that field boundaries change, landowners change, and we're constantly fighting with making sure that our records are correct. So we want to make sure that if an area has been cleared, we want to make sure that it's not a wetland. If an area is, maybe perhaps it was formerly in the Conservation Reserve Program, and now it's being cropped as part of a field, we want to make sure that our records are correct, that our field boundaries are good. And it is an enormous amount of work. Huron and Sanilac have the most CLUs in the state of Michigan. We have the largest land masses. And so within the Huron County office, our cropland is equivalent to many, many offices combined in other parts of the state of Michigan. So really, this is, there's an enormous responsibility to make sure that our 400 and some thousand acres are reported correctly and in fields that are correct.
Now, when you talk about, you know, land masses being, you know, the boundaries changing, are we talking, you know, inches, feet? I mean, because, you know, you were using these maps before, and it seems like the boundaries shouldn't really change that much. This is my 40 acres.
Right. Well, in areas that have determined wetlands, sometimes you can get, it can get down to the feet.
Really?
And to the yards, or if you're, you know, from back in the old days, chains and rods and all that sort of good stuff. But yeah, we are looking pretty closely to make sure that if an area is determined, and this is a USDA process, it doesn't have anything to do with the state of Michigan. From our standpoint, we have a USDA determination on wetlands, and if an area is determined to be wetlands, it cannot be cleared and it cannot be farmed. And if a farmer or a landowner does that, they make themselves ineligible for all USDA program payments. So there is kind of a stick that follows that process that we're really careful to make sure that we're not dispersing payments because it's retroactive.
Is that a permanent ban, or is that something that can be corrected if you restore the wetland?
It was part of a law change in 1985, so that's when kind of the clock started on not being allowed to clear wetlands. With this last farm bill, we had some requirements on crop insurance eligibility. So now if you cleared land after a certain point, you'd make yourself ineligible for crop insurance benefits as well, as that's kind of underwritten by USDA as well. So Yeah, really, it's an enormous responsibility, and we work with farmers. If there's an area that we think may be a wetland, we go through, you know, certainly we have an appeals process where we want to make sure that that really is a wetland. And in instances where we have determined that it is, we have a process where a farmer can get back into compliance by putting the land back into, you know, non-cropping practice. So we do have some options for maybe some parcels that maybe inadvertently, maybe a farmer just buys a piece of property and doesn't realize that something had been cleared since 1985. There's a lot of provisions that come into play to make sure that we're applying the rules fairly and across the entire county.
And a lot of people have different views of what a wetland looks like and what it is. I mean, it's the government obviously must have a definition that it goes by. But I mean, we have property here that, you know, on a rainy year may look like a wetland, on a dry year may not. And it's you know, you get into those gray areas, and that's where you guys have to say this is what it is.
Well, and with all the gray areas, it's kind of interesting because, you know, not even in the far distant past, you'd have a person in the Huron County office at NRCS. They would make a determination on what a wetland was or what highly erodible land was, and that would be the determination. Well, since there were some inconsistencies between counties in Michigan, what they've done is they've gone to a team approach. So a request initially goes off to a different service center. So they're analyzed by folks outside of the area. The bad part is, with that amount of workload, sometimes these determinations are taking a little bit more time. The good part is the rules are being applied consistently across the entire state. So if it's a wetland in Hillsdale, if it's a wetland in Bay County, it should be a wetland in Huron, and it shouldn't be, it should be an objective process. So we maybe have a more consistent process, but it's just taking a little bit more time. So there's some good and there's some bad, same as with everything in life.
And you can't please everybody.
That's true as well.
Okay, so you're working on the maps. Are these maps from satellite? Do planes fly over? Is that why we see a bunch of planes flying over every couple of years, because you need new maps?
I'm not sure the planes are that low, but yeah, we fly imagery. We try and get it every 2-3 years. And so when we do get our new imagery, it allows us to check for compliance issues. You know, we've been talking about wetlands, but also maybe some CRP fields that aren't supposed to be farmed. Maybe the sprayer got a little too far, a little too close to the ditch, or a little bit over the filter strip, and we're farming some acres that are supposed to be in CRP. You know, we work with participants to make sure that compliance issues are taken care of. And really, it's all in service of our big ARC PLC program, which is our major program for farmers in Huron County. We issued payments here a few months ago, and it was kind of a disappointment compared to previous years. You know, 2014, which was paid last year, ended up being just a huge dollar amount in the county. This year came down a little bit because the yields were reportedly higher for 2015. So for 2016, we're seeing some yields coming back a little bit. So maybe these payments will get back a little bit closer to what we had in 2014. But we need everything to be correct. We need land ownership updates. We need operator changes. If anything's happened this year, as we're going into the new year and as we're going into the new crop year, you know, if you report those changes now, and if you come in and report those, we can get program sign up taken care of. We can get a few things taken care of, so we're not doing that during the busy time of the year.
When you're looking at that field thinking you want to get out there, the last thing you need to think of is, oh, I didn't do that this winter, and take time out to come to the office, make an appointment, and get it done.
Well, and it's different now. Like, we always like to take care of our walk-ins. We always want to take care of the people who come in without an appointment. But with new staff, you know, training new staff, getting them on board, getting them to understand exactly how all the programs fit together. When you have that large amount of workload in June and July, the farmers are busy. They don't want to be in the office. The staff is overwhelmed.
Vacations and pulling their hair out.
It really is better to take care of some of that work during this time of the year. Now, maybe a farmer doesn't know all of the land that they're going to pick up or lose, but the changes that they do know about, if they report it now, it's a few more visits, but ultimately it's a time savings for farmers in the area.
And if you make an appointment, it gives you folks the opportunity to pull files and stuff, so you're ready for them when they come in, as opposed to having them sit there and wait while you call everything up.
Yeah. Well, and this is the time of year where we can look at that imagery in color. You can take a look at 2016. You can see how your fields look. You can see wet areas, dry areas. You can maybe even, I've seen on some imagery, it's good enough to see where maybe there are breaks in tile. So there's a lot of good information there, but it's just we don't have the time we'd like to in May, June, and July to answer those questions. And this is a time where we do have a little bit more availability. So there's a lot of interesting information, a lot of good information, and it's a lot easier to take care of it during this time of the year.
And when you're looking out the window at the nasty weather, it's kind of nice to think of summer and being out in the fields and making it work right again.
Well, and I think maybe that's the reason why we don't see a lot of participants, a lot of farmers, we don't see a lot of landowners. This isn't the time of the year where that you're really thinking about that. Maybe you're dealing with landlords, making sure landlords get paid, dealing with changes, picking up some property, dealing with equipment, dealing with tax issues. The FSA office isn't always at the front of the mind, but like I said, it sure is a time savings, and it's ultimately a convenience factor for everyone.
I don't know if I asked this or not. How accurate are these maps down to what scale can you, because you were telling me before you could see bales of hay in the field. I mean, you're getting to that point where, you know, you're getting some pretty, not just general, here's a field, but what's going on in the field.
Right. We always could kind of see what you notice the difference between previous years and now is a little bit of the blurriness is gone. So you could always see fence rows. You could always see fields. You could always see houses and barns. But now with this, what they call 1 meter imagery, you can see a lot more. You can see ditches. So when we're drawing a field, maybe we have a field down as 38 acres. But when we really look at how close a farmer is going to the ditch, maybe we can get that to 38.8 or 39. We can get a more accurate picture of what the field size actually is. One of the things that's frustrating is, so you get done reporting all your crops in the FSA office, and the FSA office says you have this many acres of sugar beets, and you have this many acres of corn, and you have this many acres of soybeans. The farmer kind of scratches their head and says, well, I think I've got a little bit more. I think it's a little bit different. And that's because our maps just aren't always as accurate as GPS and tractors. The technology that's in the cab of a tractor now is, in some cases, it is far beyond what we have available. So as we get better maps, we can get closer to the good technology that farmers are using.
Well, it also affects, I would think, the stats of your field. You know, if you're saying it's a 35-acre field and it's really because you've moved out a little bit and you're doing 38, you're getting more yield from what you think is 35 acres when it's actually 38. So it would boost up what you think you're getting per acre, because you're actually farming more acres.
Right. And it just depends on the farming operation. Some individuals really, you know, they want it down to the tenth of an acre. And for some, as long as you're within 10 or 12, they're pretty good. But for compliance purposes for our programs, it's really important that we have an accurate field. It's really important that we're capturing areas that are wetlands. It's really important that we're capturing areas that are in the conservation programs.
And so, it's important if you are renting a field per acre.
Right. Well, that too.
You want to know if what you're getting is they're being, you know, they say it's a 40 acre, but you're only going to get 38 out of it. You're going to be able to say, hey, you know, I can really only farm 38 of this. The rest of it is in fill strips and stuff.
Right. Well, yeah, that ends up being an issue as well.
But that's not an issue for you. That's
no.
Between the people with the contracts out there. But I mean, it's a tool they can use to say, hey, you know, I know it's 40 acres, you know, on the plot, but I can only do 36 acres on this because of the way it's set up.
Oh, and every once in a while, you'll get a landowner who will come in and they'll request that information and they'll want the maps redrawn. And it's absolutely something that we do and we don't mind doing. But you think, oh, goodness, when that operator finds out that there's an extra 1.2 acres there, boy, they're going to have to pay for it. So it's kind of a process that sometimes you catch a little flack for it, but ultimately it's in everybody's benefit to have correct information.
You can't fight accurate information. It should be just what it is.
Right, and when we're making payments based off that information, we definitely want it to be correct for those purposes as well.
Okay. Now, the maps that you have, are these something that is the entire county, or is it just basically what you consider farmland in the county? I mean, how close do you get to towns and stuff? Because some of those some of those fields, technically, I think some of them end up being in part of the villages and such. You have to make sure you cut them all?
Oh, sure. Really, for our purposes, what we're tracking are farms that are participating with USDA programs. So we may have fields drawn for non-program participating farms. So an area
they're surrounded by ones that basically have farm participating programs.
Exactly. So in that case, our layer is going to reflect correct information, but a lot of those farms aren't going to be program participating. They're going to be fallow, or they're going to be rented to individuals who maybe don't do anything with USDA. So we can only do so much. So at this point, we're just trying to get the active farms, the farms that we know are program participating, the farms that we're making payments on. We're obviously those kind of go to the front of the pile.
Because there are farms out there that are growing crops that really don't participate in federal type programs.
That's correct. Yeah, everything we do is voluntary.
I mean, there are programs, there's wineries out there and such. I mean, sure. You know, these things are, you know, not looking at how much per acre. You know what I mean? They're a whole different ball of wax.
Right.
And maybe they don't get anything out of a program that, unless they have a very specific specialty crop they can get into.
And we're seeing more and more of that. I think we've talked about in the past, but you know, lavender and chestnuts and grapes and organic is now a thing that, you know, we're getting better at recording and giving credit for. Agriculture is changing, and we're seeing some trends that maybe we wouldn't expect. So in some instances, maybe we expected more interest in conservation programs, because crop prices have come down a bit. But what we're seeing actually is that land is still coming out of the CRP program and it's going back into production, just as a general trend.
But I haven't seen anywhere where anyone's saying the value of our cropland is going down. So it might be worth more as a piece of cropland.
Yeah, because our conservation, our rental rates are set yearly based off soil rental rates as they're reported to the National Agricultural Statistics Service and, you know, a few other outlets. And so I feel like maybe we're at a little bit of a peak right now. And will it stay the same, or will it start to maybe trend down a little bit? Depends on where crop prices are. The outlook's not great.
Well, it can't go forever, but you know, but they aren't making any more of it either, as the old saying goes.
True. And
when you've got a county that's one of the premium places to grow, the land will be more valuable.
And actually, what we found is that Huron County actually does have the highest per dollar rate, soil rental rate, by different quality types out of anywhere in the state of Michigan. So if you're participating, if you're enrolling in programs, conservation programs right now, we are pretty much as good as it gets. But what we are also facing is we found out this year kind of a lot of interesting things. Like Michigan pulled back from one of our enhanced conservation programs, so we lost a program in conservation this year. And we also have, within the farm bill, kind of snuck up on us, but there's a national 24 million acre cap in CRP. And statutorily, we are not allowed to go beyond, as an agency, USDA Farm Service Agency is not allowed to go above 24 million acres. And we are right at the ceiling. Ooh. So if you imagine kind of a room filling up with water, we've got about an inch of air at the ceiling right now. So we're trying to figure out exactly the future. Everything is just different. We're not used to losing conservation programs. We're not used to caps. We're not used to being so specific on these maps. And it's a good process for us, but it's also very different.
So is that where you get to the point where you have to start looking at best bang for your buck in conservation?
We're still figuring out,
you know, a little tiny strip as opposed to, you know, around a bunch of places or one large plot right in the middle near a wetland. You might have to consider which would be the better thing to conserve.
And that's traditionally how we handled the whole field practices. We'd have a bid process. So all the individuals that were interested in participating would submit a bid, and they would say what they were going to do, grass or trees, 15 years, 10 years, and it would get ranked nationally. And if you were in the upper, you know, percentile, you'd get in, and if you weren't, you wouldn't. So we're looking at some of these practices that we always had filter strips available. We always had sort of wetland practices available. Now we're looking at maybe there's going to be a ranking process. Maybe there's going to be a methodology by which we actually assess this. It's not just an automatic thing anymore.
it might be closer to rivers and streams where the filtering will be more effective, or at least, you know, a good place to have them. If, sure. if you're going to get rid of anything, keep them closer to the fields and streams. There's all kinds of things that somebody's going to have to think of down the line in the agency, probably beyond the local level, and give you direction. But they're probably going to have to, if you're reaching a cap,
well, and
start to figure out, you know, when these things come due, do we renew them, or do we try to go for something that's going to give us more conservation for our buck?
Well, and remember that this is a sort of a political process. We said we weren't going to talk about politics, so we won't. But right now, the trend has been a little bit, I wouldn't say away from, but there's been an equal emphasis right now on pollinator habitat. So we actually have practices now where we can plant native grasses and wildflower mixes in whole fields, which is something that we haven't had in the past. It's kind of eating up our 24 million acre cap, but right now the big thing are bees and butterflies and birds.
Because we've had the bee die-offs in that. We're trying to make sure we have pollinators so we don't have to find a way to pollinate crops manually.
Right. Well, and so for the past 2 years, really, we've been dealing with these pollinator programs, and for 30 years of CRP, it's been water, wetlands, wetland restorations, filter strips, buffer areas, treed waterways, and now we're doing we're planting goldenrod, which is never anything I thought we'd have to put in a seed mix.
People out there getting hay fever just thinking about you planting more goldenrod.
Then it's a good time of year to talk about it, I guess. But milkweed and just a lot of different things that we
milkweed
didn't have.
For the monarch butterflies to lay their eggs on. I mean, there's all kinds of, you know, things that are out there that need to be taken care of. And the more land we clear, the less for these types of things.
Right. So CRP is trying to adapt a little bit to encompass some other conserving practices. And it's been very interesting to see. We've had several hundred acres enrolled in these programs, and to see them, the seed mixes take a little while to come online, but now that they're there, it's really interesting. It's really interesting to see kind of like that co-equal focus between protecting water and also providing pollinator habitat.
But being enrolled in this program gives the owner a little responsibility to make sure that these things are maintained. You know, that the pollinator crops, the seed that you're putting in there is still viable and not being overrun by Phragmites or something
sure.
that nobody can use.
Well, and with this 24 million acre cap, the word that we've gotten from Washington, actually right from Washington, D.C., is we want to re-enroll good CRP fields. So there's some people who traditionally, CRP was set aside. I want my farm and set aside. And that meant I'm setting aside, I'm not doing anything to it. And what we're finding is that CRP is something that requires active management. You can't let it grow up in a brush. You have to make sure that your original seed mix is intact. So if it's supposed to have four different types of grass, those four different types of grass need to be there. So what we've been told is really make sure that they're good quality. Make sure it's good quality. Don't just re-enroll something. Don't just assume it's eligible. Make sure that it's not brush. Make sure that it's in good shape before you re-enroll it. Because if these participants think that they can just re-enroll and do nothing and collect a rental, a check every year, the reality of that is coming to an end. And we're working in the office to make sure that we're identifying these good CRP practices versus the bad ones. So there's even sort of a local check to make sure that we're doing good work. We're getting a good bang for the buck, like you say.
Is there, it sounds like that would be more labor intensive, harder to do, you know, if you got a problem with your crop in your field, you plow it under and away you go on. But the whole point of the strips is not to be working them up all the time. It might be difficult to reestablish if one of the four grasses isn't taking hold right there. These types of things that it might be a little more head scratching and labor intensive to get it done right. You might be in there manually seeding just to try and get more of this stuff to grow.
Well, and the most important thing really and what we're dealing with in filter strips are weeds. And it's one of the things that farm operators, so if you're farming next to someone whose land is in CRP, even if it's just a narrow filter strip, if it's covered in burdock and thistle around July, because you can't mow CRP filter strips until the month of August after the nesting season is over, and you see all that thistle seed blowing across the field, it makes people very upset. And so it's something that we've always done a little bit, but we're going to have to focus more on it to make sure that these filter strips in these CRP fields are not just weeds.
And one man's weed is another animal's paradise. So you got the goldenrods and all this other stuff. Yeah, you know.
Goldenrod and milkweed maybe we'll give a pass to, but thistle is just not a good, not what you'd want to put on the CRP brochure. And so we want to make sure that these...
purple loose leaf or whatever that is.
Loose strife, or Phragmites, or just...
But these are the things that really establish themselves quickly because they are invasive and they take over.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're working with landowners and farmers to make sure that these fields are maintained well. But we're finding some of these contracts are getting reviewed nationally, and they're really looking for weeds. They're looking for brush where it's not supposed to be. They're looking for trees where trees aren't supposed to be, and they're looking for grass where grass isn't supposed to be. And the level of scrutiny has gotten to be a lot higher. And I think that speaks to the fact that a county like Huron disperses 1.3, 1.4 million in CRP payments every year. We want to make sure that we're getting a good return for that investment.
And the aerial maps would make that easier. You'd had in the past to do visual inspections. I mean, at least now if you have to make a visual inspection, you got a pretty good idea going in that I have to verify this before I do anything. But, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah, you can absolutely see brush now. You can absolutely see where there are farmed areas of CRP acres. So it's a tool that we use because we just have less staff available.
I can't blame the GPS on my tractor. That was a little off.
Well, yeah.
It automatically plows. I just did what it told it.
Right. Headed on auto steer. The boom of the sprayer was over. Yeah, we hear a lot. We hear a lot of that.
Well, that's a learning curve with new technology anytime we get it.
Right.
Is making it work and making it work to everybody's satisfaction.
Well, and the good thing is we're seeing also, there's so many interesting things with drones. There's so many interesting, the farmers in this area are innovators and they're doing innovative things. And it is difficult to keep up sometimes because of all of the things that are going on. And we try and adapt as well as we can. And, you know, we're getting new staff and they have different experiences and backgrounds, and they've worked in different sectors of the economy. It's really an interesting thing to see this generational change in agriculture. It's just sad to see that happening in a time where commodity prices are low, where dairy prices are low, where across all commodity classes, it just seems like there's just general weakness everywhere. So hopefully not for too long.
Okay. One of the reasons I asked you to come in here is I had heard something about a loan program that is still going strong in the area. And what is going on with the microloans and the other loan programs for like storage bins and that?
Right. So we're talking about changes in the agency. Everything's always changing. They're always keeping it. They're always sort of modifying to keep things farmer friendly, customer facing.
Find things aren't working right or not for its intent. They change them.
Sure.
That's what they do.
Sure. Well, the old farm storage facility loan program, the old grain bin program, forever and ever, 7 years. If you were under 100,000, if you were under 50,000, you didn't need a mortgage. If you were over 50,000, we had to take a mortgage. Now the program is being opened up, has over the course of the last year or two, where now we don't have to take a mortgage unless the cost of the loan goes over 100,000, so that's a little
and
bit
that's
flexible.
Just the loan.
Just the loan.
If you're paying for other parts of it, you know, that is
out of pocket. Doesn't count.
It's just the loan from USDA on that.
Correct. So yeah, in a lot of cases, we'll do these $95,000 loans because we want to get under the 100,000 threshold. And another thing that's changed is, so we had first that was 7 year term. Well, now we have 10 and 12 years for loans that are high dollar amounts, but we also have 3 and 5 year terms for these micro loans. So now, under 50,000, not only are we saying you don't need a mortgage, but now we're saying you don't need to provide the 3 years of financial records. You don't need to necessarily prove your production. It's a lot. And with a regular loan, you have to have a 15% down. This loan, you only have to have 5% down. So these micro loans under 50,000 are still farm storage for grain bins, but we're also now doing handling equipment. So before we couldn't do, like, we could do a loan on the grain bin, but we couldn't do a loan on the auger
that goes into it. That makes it practical.
Correct. Because in a lot of cases, those were on wheels and it was portable equipment. And so it was portable, wasn't eligible because it wasn't permanently fixed. Now we can do some of those loans. We can do loans for hops. We can do loans for sap, maple sap. We can do loans for honey. There's some dairy aspects for like cheese and yogurt. So refrigeration, mobile equipment. So maybe a refrigerator truck would be eligible under the new program. So it's been a big change from the old 7-year, $100,000. And the interest rates on those are locked in, and you don't have to, for most of FSA's loans that the loan section handles, you have to be refused commercial credit. So we can't compete with banks. This program, because farmers are growing the commodity, that's where their eligibility comes from. So it's as long as you're growing the crop, you're eligible. And the interest rate right now, it changes every month, but it's fixed at 2.25% as of January. So a little bit lower. It's crept up a lot here in the last few months with interest rates.
Well, interest rates in general, they've been raising the Fed has been raising interest rates, and it's going to trickle down to just about everything.
But still, 2.25%. Not too bad for 7 years.
It'd be putting it on your credit card.
Correct. Correct. So yeah, that's been a big program change for us as well. And we've had more interest in it. Another thing, you wouldn't necessarily expect farmers to be building bins, making a lot of capital investments when crop prices are low. But sometimes when things are bad, you have to get a little bit, you have to change what you're doing and change how you market and change how you're delivering that grain. And a bin helps you do that.
Storing it until it's not in the peak harvest season may get you more down the line.
Correct.
That's the whole thing about bins. And if you have your own storage and your own property, you're not paying for storage elsewhere. Those types of things come into play. And farmers have to do the math and see how it works out for them, how much they expect to store and how much it's going to cost and what they're paying now. And I'm sure they sharpen their pencils and they figure it all out.
Well, and these grain facilities are so that the technology behind them is quite complex. And fortunately, we have a couple of vendors that work within the area that build these grain bins that they do a great job. They teach farmers how to operate the facilities. They're really proactive. They work really well with USDA in providing us information so that the farmer doesn't have to do all of the legwork. So it's been one of those things, very difficult program to implement, very different for us, but it's something that we have started to do a fair amount of. In fact, I think, right now we probably have about $400,000 or $500,000 in loans in process, just in the area. So it's a fair amount of activity,
And people can get these loans any time of the year. Or is there a end date for them, type of thing? I mean, sometimes programs, you know, well, this is the enrollment period, and right. then we pass out the funds.
Well, the real program provision is sometimes the program is meant to be started, meant to be approved before construction begins.
Yeah, they do like you to come in the planning stage so they know exactly what you're doing. And
So in some cases, you know, we get farmers who are coming in and the bin's half up, and, you know, it kind of limits some of the things that we can do. And so we really want to, you know, make sure that if you're interested, involve us at the early part of that process. It helps us kind of do a needs assessment and work with you as well.
It'd be nice to know what type of loan you're going to be getting before you start having to pay for it being constructed.
Right. Well, and what term, what interest rate, getting it in early. Okay, so if we're looking at interest rates in a long-term upcycle, the sooner that you come in, you're locking in interest rates, not to say that it won't be back down to 1.5%. Every time I make a projection on crop prices or interest rates, I'm always proved wrong. But yeah, getting it in early, if you think interest rates are going to be creeping up, it kind of looks that way. The earlier you do it, you lock in those interest rates because it's locked in as your approval date. So a loan locked in December was 0.5% less, better than January.
Okay. And what do they need to bring to you? Do they just come in with their plans? Is this something they start online? How do they get the ball rolling on this type of thing?
Basically, it starts with...
Or do these vendors...
These vendors will...
step by step through what you're really going to need if you want some of this.
Typically, we'll see a quote from a vendor saying, look, this is what we're proposing. It can change, but this is what we're looking at. And then when we get involved in the process, we can kind of handle those changes as they come along. But it's, like I said, the earlier, the better on those.
But this is private farm loans. This isn't for businesses or anything to expand. But farmers are usually a corporation or a business, but you're looking for a producer rather than someone who just handles commodities as a whole business.
Right, the individual, the LLC, the corporation, or the trust that's actually doing the farming. Because, again, this is a program that you have to be eligible for. It's not something that someone can just walk in off the street.
I wanted a grain bin in my backyard. Come on.
Yeah, you start a grain elevator.
Grain elevator. That would work.
this program's a little bit different. And, again, it goes to we never want to be competing with commercial credit. And so you have to be eligible to be able to get the loan.
Terrific. And again, they can get info from you on a lot of this stuff and a lot online. I imagine the Farm Service Agency has a lot of information online.
Yeah, the website's actually gotten a fair bit better here the last 2 years. You can.
Because more and more people are using web for information, and you want to go to like the Farm Service Agency where you're getting information you can kind of count on, because there's a lot of stuff out there that is predicting stuff that may not happen.
Right. Well, and in the end, it always still comes down to that call. I'm calling about the money that you're going to pay me. And it's like, well, let's figure out which program we're talking about. Because, in some cases, you go through everything, you'll see what the requirements are, and some participants aren't interested. So we want to go through that.
Everything with government, there are some strings attached.
Always strings attached.
There's, you have to do this, you got to keep these ducks in lines, you got to report this. And some farmers just are very private. They don't want to do a lot of this stuff.
Yeah. And there's a wide variety of different kind of perspectives on it. But for the farmers that want to participate, we're in the office and we try and help out. Like I said, we've got a few new faces in the office and we're doing some training and we're trying to get our conservation books clear. We're trying to get our maps updated. We'd like to get some of this program sign up done now before we get into the summer.
This is important, though, to get it done, because people don't realize that it isn't grandfathered in.
Right. Well, and what we ran into, especially with this cap in CRP, it's going to be, at the very least, we were talking about rankings. We don't know if that's going to happen. I mean, again,
anything can come down the road.
Don't take me to a casino and don't play cards with me, because you lose. But it's one of those things where we know it's going to likely be at least a first come, first serve. So if you have a CRP field that's maybe expiring September 30th of this year, letters went out to all those participants, but it's one of those things that you don't want to wait on, because we don't know how this 24, we've never had caps before, so it's totally new for us. And like I said, we're kind of adapting as we go along and getting ready for the new administration and getting ready for a new farm bill. So it's all kinds.
It seems like you just got a new farm
bill. I know. Every 5 years, it's all kinds of uncertain. But I feel like I've been in the Huron County office for a few years now. It's starting to feel a little bit more. Yeah, I'm from the area, so that was a bit of a help. But every time you think you got it, there are always changes.
And hopefully for the better.
Hopefully for the better. Hopefully for the better.
Because they learn from what's happened in the past and where trends are going and the direction they want to take things.
Correct.
As they come into office and they do all the other things, every other year we have elections.
Yes.
So, well, I appreciate you coming out. Again, if people, do they need to report their planting intentions at this point?
Not at this time. So we won't report crops until everything's planted. That's one thing that we have to do in the summer. But where we got in trouble the last 2 years is we were trying to report crops and do program signups at the same time and do eligibility.
And land changes and all this other kind of stuff that goes along with it. And then you're sitting there with a person three times as long as they need to be. And
exactly
other people
right.
are waiting.
Yeah, and I mean, just frankly, we dropped the ball a little bit on that. And we want to make sure that in the future, it's not all quite so disorganized here in the summer. So if the farmers will help us out with that, hopefully we'll reward them with better service and more information, more and better information. That's one thing that we can provide and are happy to do it.
If they have questions, call the office.
Yep, 269-9549.
Thanks for being with us again. This time of year is kind of a quiet one for many farmers, except, of course, the dairy farmers. Cows don't sit there and say, well, you're not going to milk me till spring.
Right.
At least they don't say that very often. But now they're making plans, and it's time to get together with the Farm Service Agency and the federal programs to make a smooth transition into the planting, growing, harvesting, and hopefully getting something a little back, too.
Right. Well, and again, it's kind of a double-edged thing, because now our program, the the crop programs, at least, now are based off of losses. So there, if corn goes to $5 or $6 again, there will be no program payments for the crop side, and we hope that happens. But seeing where things are going, we hope it doesn't get as bad as LDPs. But if there are program payments available, especially in these times where farmers just justifiably need them, we want them to be available, and we want everything to be dispersed timely. We want it to be based off correct information, because it's in everybody's benefit for that to be done.
And we never know how the growing season's going to pan out. It's going to be dry. It's going to be too wet. Dry at the wrong times, wet at the wrong times. We're all tied to Mother Nature and what happens.
Right. And so actually, one of the things we've been getting a lot of calls on are financial projections. So a lot of farmers are sitting down saying, okay, how are we going to do this in 2017? And
you'd like to optimistically look at your best case scenario, but
if there's going to be a
program, happens.
If there's going to be a program payment, we want to know what it is. But because it's based off the cropping year and we're still marketing these 2016 crops, we won't know what the 2016 payment is until we are well into 2017, which is a horror for planning. But based on crop prices and based on where it seems like maybe yields were down a little bit in 16 versus 15. So, we can kind of shoot some projections. It looks like maybe there'll be a payment there, but we always hope that crop prices will go up and it won't be needed. But if it is needed, it'll be available.
It's a good umbrella to have.
Good umbrella to have.
Thanks for being with us.
Always a pleasure.
Our guest today on the program has been Nathan Prill from the Huron Farm Service Agency office, just to the west of Bad Axe on M53. Stop on out if you have questions and want to get yourself updated on your land and such this time of year. There's other times you have to go in for other things, but they will be glad to help you out. They've got some new staff in there. Get them a little break, and they'll get you through all the processes that you need. Coming up at the top of the hour, we will clue you in on all the latest in the news. Stick with us.